the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Hello and welcome to The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this Monday through Friday hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And heading off the absurd column this morning, what the heck's up with my web connection? Well, we're having some issues here. Excuse me, we're having some issues here studio-wise, apparently, and not connecting to Facebook. Facebook Live, that is. I can log into Facebook, but for some reason the show feed is not going, so no Facebook Live feed today until we can get this figured out. It's probably part of a larger problem we're having here at the studio facility, because the studio facility being actually in my home. I work out of my home most of the time. Occasionally, I venture out and go to other places to do pretty much the same thing, but most of the time, it's here in my own home studio facility. And it's been a weird, weird weekend. I'll tell you more about that when we move forward. But first, how are you? You doing good? I hope you're well. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. I'm glad that you subscribe and or just check in from time to time to listen. And if you're just checking in, why aren't you subscribing? Please subscribe to the podcast. You can get it everywhere. Everywhere good podcasts can be found. Just search for The Daily Perspective Podcast. You can also search under my name, and that would be me, Mark Congleton. And you will find it wherever decent podcasts are found, and you can subscribe and enjoy the fun every day. It'll just get delivered right to you, so you can stay up on what's happening here, like so many around the country and other parts of the world have. Thank you so much for being there. It is it's the Monday edition, February 3rd. We've just passed through Groundhog's Day. If you repeatedly pass through Groundhog's Day, please let me know. I'd like to talk to you. Bill Murray apparently is still going through Groundhog Day, according to the ad on the Super Bowl yesterday. That was funny. I don't know about you, but I got to be honest with you. I skipped the Super Bowl. My wife Jane and I were catching up on DVR stuff, and honestly, I just didn't care. I've checked out on the NFL. I'm just not an NFL. I've checked out. Well, all the Kaepernick stuff and the kneeling and all that other stuff just showed me they weren't really. It showed me that the NFL, just like sports in general, is an entertainment franchise. It's sports, yes, but sports is a form of entertainment, and as such, they're plugged into the same mentality as the entertainment industry, and that is whatever the progressives say must be true. And anybody who's not progressive must be a fascist. And so I checked out. Not interested. The commercials, however, yeah, I was interested in that. And I have seen a few of them, and they're just precious, just fantastic. And the Bill Murray one I watched it yesterday and laughed. I laughed a lot, in fact. And I've heard some things about other ones. And today, probably not long after the show today, after I get through recording, I'll be checking those out online because, you know, they're all there. You can watch them all now. You could actually watch them in advance of the Super Bowl if you knew where to look. I just haven't had the interest in so far because I've had other things going on. At any rate, so the buzz is about the halftime show. Congrats to the Chiefs, Kansas City. Good for you. I've been to the property. I haven't been in the stadium, but the Chiefs and the Royals have their stadiums just they're butting up next to each other on a big piece of property in Kansas City. I've been to the Royals facility, but I haven't been inside the Chiefs facility, and it's impressive. I mean, it's an impressive place, and the people there are great, and I'm happy for the Chiefs. Good for them. Now that's done, that's good news. Well, what's up with the halftime show? What is it with? It seems like the NFL, their choice of entertainment at halftime has been spotty at best. There have been other halftime shows which people point to, which shows how it should be done. Like when Prince was there, That was a halftime show, friends. That was a halftime show. But last night, J-Lo and Shakira, no, that was weird. That was just odd. What I'm curious about is, will the Me Too movement have anything to say about it? Will the women's movement, anybody in any kind of women's advocacy, will they have anything to say about it? Except what I've seen, which is, it was empowering. Really? That was empowering? Women dressed scantily, crotch grabbing, pole dancing, one of them putting her child in a cage along with a lot of other children in cages, making a political statement, that was all okay. That was good. So being objectified and sexualized on national television in front of all those people dressing the way they did and pole dancing and writhing around, and that was all empowering. I'm just taking notes for a friend. Please let me know if I'm wrong here. That was empowering? Okay. And now you understand the insanity of the progressive movement. There is no consistency. They just applaud whatever they like and whatever they think is cool. But when it's inconsistent, they change the subject. And they will today. It's just a bizarre situation. It's another one of those examples of why trying to think like a progressive will damage your brain. It's just really sad. It's really, really sad. I want to know how writhing around a stripper pole and dressing the way they dressed, and I'm not a prude. Please don't say that and say I'm just condemning. I'm not. I really do want to understand how it is that two women can dress the way they did, can dance the way they did, can writhe around a stripper pole the way one of them did, and that's empowering for women. And yet, talking out of the other side of their mouth, it's demeaning and it's objectifying and it's sexualizing. How are they, how do you play both sides of that and still believe you're credible? Inquiring minds want to know. Please. Maybe I'm just a little grumpy because I had a bad weekend. I don't know. And let's see. Can I tell you the whole story? I'll do the best to tell you the whole story. The weekend. The weekend started with good intentions. Sometime last week, I forget exactly what day last week, but the overhead light over the sink in the kitchen stopped working. I'm thinking, oh, it's the bulb. It's a fluorescent fixture. It's been there for the entire time we've owned the house. This house was built in 1977. Been around for a while. Oh, yeah. Been around for, what's that, 43 years? And I know the previous owner. I know the people that built the house. So I actually had lunch with them last week and was telling them, oh, yeah, that light fixture. I said, well, it's been there since 1977. And we never changed it out. So, and in fact, when they lived here, they never turned it off. It was on all the time. So it goes off. I figure, old fluorescent fixture. Let's check the bulb first. Oh, well, that didn't change anything. That means the ballast is out. I can probably buy an LED fixture for less than the ballast. So I did that. And the plan was for Saturday to replace the fixture. And so after breakfast and thrift store scavenging with my friend Mike, I came home and promptly went to work. I swapped out the feature, went back downstairs to the garage, turned the breaker back on, went back upstairs, flipped the light switch. It didn't come on. So I get my multimeter, my tester, and I go through everything and check. There's power. It's coming from downstairs at the breaker box. There's power to the switch. The power hits the switch. The power comes out the other side of the switch. The switch works. So I turn the breaker off again and check both ends of the wiring going to the light. There are three wires, by the way. If you've ever worked on home electricity, there's three wires. And I hate to bore you with this. There's ground, there's white, there's black. the ground tested. The wire was solid, no problem. The white tested solid. The black didn't connect. So there's a break in the black wire. I'm thinking, 43-year-old house, lots of squirrels. I bet I've got a squirrel that's gotten loose in the attic and committed Harry Carey on the power cord. So I pulled the ladder out, got up in the attic. And for me, after having the two knee surgeries I've had in the past year, that's entertaining to watch. It's really something. Oh, gosh. Anyway, so I get up in the attic. I make my way across. I clear away all the insulation against this. And this is on the far end of the house from the attic access, by the way. So I've got to make my way through from one end of the house to the far end of the house through all of that roofing structure and everything, and finding the proper places to step. And I clear away all of the stuff and find where the wire comes up from the switch and where it goes to the light. And lo and behold, the area where the wire comes up from the switch is blackened and charred. And I thought, wow, something chewed through this. No, nothing chewed through it. As I got closer and looked, I got the light closer and got down where I could really see it. There are three cables running down through this hole, and it's all charred up, and it looked to me like there was something stuck through the hole. Guess what? 43 years ago, in 1977, somebody who was putting up the siding on the outside of the house, on that end of the house, drove a nail right through that wire. It's been giving us little issues the whole time we've lived in this house, the past 10 or so years we've been here. And every now and then, the breaker would pop when we'd try to heat something up in the microwave. I thought, we're going to have those looked at one day. But until then, I'll just keep flipping the breaker, which I know is stupid. Please don't tell me. But finally, I know why the breaker's been flipping. There's been a nail through one of the wires, and it's been arcing. And every time it arcs, things surge, and the breaker says, oh, and it flips. And that's been the problem. And I thought, well, geez, that's amazing. Well, at least I know what the problem is now. Simple fix, go to the store, buy some new wire, pull the old out, put in some new, completely rewire the circuit. This is the day I'm going to have Saturday. Yay for me. So that's what I do. Well, actually, I made up my mind after doing the digging and everything, I would do it Sunday, because by that time, with every, just one thing and another, the day was pretty much shot. So that's what I planned to do. I got up, I got the wire, I got back in the attic, I made sure I was right about everything, turned all the power off, prepared to pull the new wire up through the wall using the old wire, just attaching to the end of it and pulling the wire up. And I pulled on the wire and it broke. It broke right where the nail had gone through. So that says to me, it's been spitting and arcing and it's burned through enough through the other two wires or whatever was there that it was so weak it broke when I gave it a tug. And I'm not talking about pulling on it really, really hard. It just broke. It and the insulation was burned through everything. And oh, that's just great. I tried a can full of different ways to feed the wire. It was unsuccessful every time. I can't move that wire. There's apparently another nail through it, or it's bound up really tight somewhere. So I just decided to call an electrician at some point. But in the meantime, we'll just live without that light over the sink. We'll be fine. And so I made sure that the wires were all disconnected from the switch and the wires coming up from the basement that had power, that those were terminated properly so they wouldn't cause any problems. I turned everything back on, and now we've got on that same set of switches, there's a garbage disposal. It works, and everything in the kitchen's working great. The microwave works. Everything is fine. Lovely. And then I got the vacuum and started cleaning up where I'd been tracking stuff around the house. And the vacuum, when I plugged it in an outlet, which is near the kitchen, I plugged the vacuum in and started vacuuming and literally got about 10 seconds into it and the vacuum stopped. Yeah. more problems. Now, the overhead light in the kitchen doesn't work. The outlet the microwave was plugged into doesn't work. The outlet on the other side of the wall doesn't work. The light switch, there's a light switch on the other side of the wall that turns on a hall light outside the kitchen, doesn't work. The lights in the dining room don't work. The lights over the deck and the rear stairs don't work. Some of the outlets in the living room don't work, but another one literally 4 feet away does. So there's a lot more trouble in that wall where the wires have been burning, and it's gonna get expensive.
Great googly moogly.
Ain't it the truth? Great googly moogly. That's pretty much my assessment of the weekend. Sometime this morning I will be calling an electrician. And I have a good reference, and I'm going to call the guy and see when he can get out here. I tell you, this whole thing has me kind of wigged out. I'm glad the light went out, because as a result of the light over the sink going out, we know about the problem and we're aware of the situation, and we're very thankful that nothing worse happened. I mean, the house could have caught fire in the middle of the night with the arcing and the spitting and everything. If it had been if the situation was just ever so slightly different, you know, if it was just a little bit different, for example, some sort of a rodent had been building a nest or something nearby, it would have caught fire and the house would have gone up and in the middle of the night with us in it, or while we were away, we would have come home to find the thing burned to the ground. And, you know, this just so much could have gone wrong that didn't go wrong. And I'm very thankful for that. But today will be an interesting day. And hopefully it will also answer some questions. But it's also going to be an expensive one. And right now it's just not a good time. But when is it ever a good time for that? Is it ever a good time for lots of money to go flowing out of your house? No. No, it's not. Well, let's move forward, shall we? Enough about me. How are you? Did you see the story about the New York Times reporter who has done something I think is just despicable because of a private message received from a football coach? Yeah, a Brown University football coach sent a message to a New York Times reporter. This is privately, not in a public forum. Not where everybody can see it, just privately to this person. And the next thing you know, this football coach from Brown University is facing some pretty bizarre stuff. And this is an article from PJ Media by Megan Fox. It says, when searching for the answer to who is the worst person on the planet today, one should always look to the dinosaur media. Without fail, you'll find someone whose actions are so repulsive and jaw-droppingly reprehensible that even the seven princes of hell would recoil in disgust and promptly hold a press conference to disavow any association. Today's example of evil masquerading as professionalism is New York Times reporter and MSNBC contributor Michael Schmidt. Schmidt has a large following on Twitter, over 200,000, and used his large platform to dox an offensive coordinator for Brown University's football team, Vince Marino, who has a much smaller following of around 5,000 people. Schmidt did this because Marino sent him a polite criticism through a private message, which Schmidt then sent out to the world while also exposing his workplace to his rabid followers. Somehow this does not violate Twitter's policy of no targeted harassment. Marino wrote, "You work for the New York Times. Credibility is an issue. You just want to take down the president at all costs. If you wanted the truth, you'd investigate Joe Biden getting the Ukrainian prosecutor fired. That actually happened. Shameful. I bet you couldn't have said it better yourself. And for the life of me, she says, I can't see where the coach went wrong, but in the mind of a complicit member of the media, who does the Democrats' bidding for a living, Schmidt took the opportunity, not for some self-reflection on why he had ignored Biden admitting to getting Ukrainian prosecutor Shokin fired under very suspicious circumstances, but instead chose to tweet out Marino's message in an effort to cancel him. By the way, just like his co-worker Maggie Haberman, a known tool of the DNC as exposed by WikiLeaks, Schmidt has also been awarded a Pulitzer for journalism. The Twitter outrage mob Schmidt whipped up is already tweeting Brown University and demanding Marino's head for daring to criticize a member of the vaunted media. Wow. This is a sad but true example of the progressive brain in action. Some of the Twitter responses. Fascists have united with Mr. Schmidt. Ooh. Another. Coach Marino is an example of easily duped victims of Fox News, Russian-style propaganda and misinformation, an embarrassment for Brown University, exactly the Putin-directed disinformation campaign that Fiona Hill begged Congress not to amplify. Universities must do better. Another says, Coach V, please do some research and get educated. Maybe go to the library at Brown University. I hear they're a great education institution. Another says, let's hope Brown University takes a good long look at this. By the way, Coach, we don't want to take down a president. We just don't want a corrupt one. We want justice. Wow, that's somebody who's been deeply deceived by the left. Another says, hey, Brown, talking to a couple of different people. This is one of your coaches. Embarrassing. Fortunately, the majority of the replies on Schmidt's tweet were confirming that his behavior is exactly why the American public mistrusts and dislikes news reporters so much. Here are just two of hundreds of great comments telling Schmidt that he's a terrible person. First up, hey, New York Times Legal, is this the kind of behavior that you allow from these bullies that you hire? Just last week, WAPO suspended a journalist for revealing private information. And the other says, the fact that you share this accompanied by the name of his employer gives us a better sense of where the left is. Instead of replying to a polite message that expresses a polite opinion, you intend to jeopardize his job. And yes, you did exactly that. Otherwise, no need to mention it. Now, Twitter has not suspended Schmidt for targeted harassment. Marino has locked down his Twitter account. Brown University has issued no statement. What are the chances that Marino comes out of this job with his job intact? 25%? This is why the media is the enemy of the people, and until they stop treating private citizens like bugs to be crushed, their relationship with the general public will only deteriorate. Just as a reminder, talking about Maggie Haberman, we talked about this last week, WikiLeaks proved that she is a Democrat operative and her New York Times expose should go in the garbage. Like I said, this is an example of the progressive brain in action. Rather than dealing privately, politely, honestly, with someone who disagrees with them, this hack, Michael Schmidt with the New York Times, who is an MSNBC contributor, this leftist hack took a private message and went public with it, and then revealed to everybody in his Twitter feed where the guy works. He doxed the guy. His response was not a polite exchange of ideas and information. His response was an attempt to destroy the man's living, the way he feeds his family. So rather than having an honest conversation, this leftist opted to attack, to destroy. And this, as I said, is the progressive brain in action. It's something, an example, we should remember. And something that you should also recognize if you've ever dealt with progressives in social media. They don't have intelligent exchanges. They attack. If you back them into a corner with facts, with truth, regardless of how polite and how honest you are, eventually they get nasty. They post links to leftist articles to prove their case. They don't show that they have their own thoughts on the issues. They don't substantiate their position other than to quote other people who are quoting other people. And when you demonstrate that there are flaws in their reasoning, they get nasty. They unfriend you. And they do things like this. They attack you and try to destroy the means of supporting yourself and your family. You've probably seen it yourself. And now here's a more prominent example. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
You're a big, fat, fumbling, oblivious, pepe-wearing mega idiot.
Oh, wow. Apparently a response from social media. It's the Monday edition, February 3rd, 2020 edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today. Thanks again for being there. Thanks for subscribing. Glad you're part of the family. And hopefully you had a great weekend. You didn't spend your time over the weekend crawling around the attic in all that insulation. Oh, man. Can you tell I'm not looking forward to making the call to the electrician? I'm just not. I want to get the problem fixed, but I really don't want to have to shell out all the money it's going to take to get the problem fixed. Because I know what's going to end up happening is they're going to have to rewire a section of the house. I've seen three pieces of Romex going down this hole, and I know that they all tie to everything that's gone out, and that all of the arcing over the years has just destroyed wiring there. So much for plans. I'm looking through the stories here that I have in the stack, thinking about what to talk about. Senator Warren, a senator has warned Joe Biden of what could be the consequences of the impeachment process that's been going on. There's a story about the DNC changing some rules. Michael Moore is unhappy about that and other things. And then there's this. There's new Gallup polling. And you know, I've told you about polling in the past, that polling is used to shape public opinion rather than reflect it. And knowing that the methods are questionable, by and large, and that the results are thus not really trustworthy completely. When you look at something, the result of polling that is good news, you have to wonder how much better is it really than what they're reporting. New Gallup polling shows a double-digit increase in the state of race relations since President Donald Trump took office, a far cry from what the mainstream media is telling people every day. That double-digit increase, 14%. 14%. The Political Insider reported that Gallup's survey demonstrates numerous categories in which the president has improved the lives of Americans since relieving Barack Obama of his duties in January of 2017. The polling indicates double-digit improvements in how Americans view the nation's economy, security from terrorism, military strength, and the state of race relations. According to Gallup, the position of blacks and other racial minorities, the distribution of income and wealth, and the opportunity for a person to get ahead through hard work have all increased under President Trump. Political insiders summed up this. They say, the position of blacks and other racial minorities in the nation rose 9% since Obama's last day in office, while the state of race relations in America shot up 14%. As noted by the outlet, CBS reporter Major Garrett commented last month that any president would be happy to oversee such numbers. He said, it can be fairly stated that this administration, because of President Trump's quiet prodding, has done quite a bit for funding of historically black colleges and universities, the First Step Act, which was a massive step toward criminal justice reform. That's a legacy on the agenda side that almost any president after 3 years would want to claim, particularly President Obama. Though the outlook was generally sunny for race relations under then-President Barack Obama, the reality was anything but. Mr. Obama's penchant for interjecting racial narrative, even in local cases, was no doubt a catalyst for racial tension in the United States. Now, I need to stop there. There's more to the article, but I need to stop there because this makes a point that's been just hammering on my brain for the last couple of minutes here, and that is that the reality was anything but sunny because of Obama's tendency to interject racial narrative even into local cases. Remember the beer summit? Remember police acted stupidly? Do you remember that? That was him getting involved in a local race relations case. Why would he do such a thing? Because racism had to be interjected into the conversation constantly by the Obama administration. Why? Because progressives, in order to take over, must divide people. And dividing people on race issues is easy. And progressives go for that easy shot. They know that if they can raise racial tensions, then they can play the hero for the victim class. And that's what this is all about. When it comes to progressivism and race, they stoke the fires and fan the flames because that gives them something to step in and solve to be the heroes. We're here for you. We're fighting for you. We want you to be taken care of. We're your people. We'll make sure everything is fair and equitable and justified. And this was the message that went out before Barack Obama was elected. His campaign may have never said, we're going to take care of all these things. We're going to level the playing field for you. We're going to make sure you don't have to worry about your car payment and your mortgage. We're going to make sure you get a phone. They may never have said those things, but their surrogates did. People like Al Sharpton and the other race-baiting, race-advantage takers, those people did. And so we had news clips that we watched, we saw time and time again. When Obama's president, I won't have to worry about my mortgage anymore. I won't have to worry about my car anymore. You remember those things, right? You remember people being given cell phones. Remember the Obama phones? You remember. This was all there because the progressives were playing the hero. The progressive movement was stoking the fires of racial division so they could be the hero and come to the rescue. Out of one side of the mouth, they're saying, life is horrible for you, life is terrible for you, you should be angry about this. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they're saying, we're the people who are going to make sure you're taken care of. And this is what they did leading up to Obama's win. And this, oddly enough, was one way that they were going to transform the United States of America, by seeding division. And this is what they always do. When you look at their claims of racism and white supremacy, the ones that are going on nowadays, they're pointing that finger at President Trump and accusing him of racism and white supremacy. Look very closely, and you'll see that the racism and white supremacy is all coming from the progressives. It's not coming from the people supporting President Trump. For example, there are those who've been screaming that in Virginia, where there was that huge march with pro-gun people, they were saying it was all white supremacists and they were looking for a fight. Nothing could be further from the truth. It was peaceful. It was respectful. They even cleaned up after themselves. When they left, the place they occupied was as clean or cleaner than it was when they got there. No fights, and even though the news media didn't show you, there were a lot of black people carrying guns. They were part of it. They were there defending their rights to bear arms. It wasn't just white people. It wasn't a white supremacist gathering. But that's not what the progressives want you to believe, because they want you to believe that white supremacism is on the rise, that racism is on the rise. Racism, yeah, it is on the rise in the progressive movement. And they're using race against everyone. Not just President Trump. You've heard this, if you support President Trump, that makes you a racist. Talking heads on the news have said so. Politicians have said so. You are guilty by association. And that association, doesn't transfer guilt, and the source of the guilt doesn't exist, because there's nothing. I can't find anything that substantiates the charge of racism against President Trump. I just can't. So far, everything I've seen that's an accusation of racism against Trump ends up being somebody with sour grapes for being fired for being a lousy employee, or they're unhappy with some political move he has made, and they interpret it as being racism, when it's not racism. It's just not bending over backwards to help the black community in the way they want the particular political activists want the help to be delivered. But the surveys are saying everything is getting better. Better now than it was under Obama. The BBC, which leans entirely left, also begrudgingly admitted so. Admitted in January of 2017, race relations have arguably become more polarized and tenser since 20th of January 2009. Though smaller in scale and scope, the demonstrations sparked by police shootings of unarmed black men were reminiscent of the turbulence of the 60s, they said. The toxic cloud from the tear gas unleashed in Ferguson and elsewhere cast a long and sometimes overwhelming shadow. Not since the L.A. riots of 92, the violent response to the beating of Rodney King and the later acquittal of the police officers filmed assaulting him, has the sense of black grievance and outrage been so raw. The BBC noted that the Obama years gave rise to the controversial, racially charged movement Black Lives Matter and highlighted a significant drop in Americans regarding racial relations as good. That's because the Obama administration and the progressive movement, as I said, fanned the flames of racism and used that as a tool politically to their advantage. They were manipulating people and their emotions for their political purposes. That's evil. But that's progressivism.
looked at me as if I had lobsters crawling out of my ears.
Yeah, I get that all the time. It's the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. And I'm just not hitting on all cylinders today, and I apologize for that. You may not notice it, but I do, and it's just driving me a little bit nuts. Oh, man. I am sore in places I forgot I had. I'll just say that. Well, can we shift gears and talk about creepy Uncle Joe for a minute or two or 10? I don't... Joe Biden. A lot of people aren't really familiar with Joe Biden. They see him as this regular guy. You know, Amtrak Joe, the guy who takes the train to work every day. That guy. They see him as, you know, just this regular guy. And he's the moderate. He's the moderate in the Democrat field. There's so much contrast between the lunatics, the Elizabeth Warren, the Bernie Sanders, those people, the people who were out there on the fringe advocating for democratic socialism and the like. It's just stark, the contrast, that is, if you don't know Joe. Well, Iowa Republican Senator Joni Ernst has said something that causes us to bring that into sharper focus. And considering the atmosphere that's been created by the impeachment dog and pony show, this circus of an impeachment, this fraud of a process, we have to think about what could happen if Joe actually won. Well, Iowa Republican Senator Joni Ernst suggested to Bloomberg News on Sunday, yesterday, that Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden, if elected, could potentially face impeachment immediately after being sworn into office because Democrats have opened Pandora's box when it comes to lowering the bar for what qualifies as being an impeachable offense. Think about that. It used to be that there had to be a crime, a high crime, or a misdemeanor. A high crime or misdemeanor. That bar had to be crossed. That line had to be crossed before action could be taken. In the Clinton situation, there was an actual crime. Yeah, perjury. And in the Nixon administration, a line was crossed as well where he finally said, okay, that's it, I resign. Rather than go through all the nonsense of all of the stuff that had to do with an impeachment. And honestly, if we're going to be honest, during the 8 years of the Obama administration, he crossed the line 5 different times. He actually did 5 things which were impeachable. 5 times. And nobody talks about that. I encourage you to look that up today. There's your homework. Look for the 5 times that Barack Obama actually committed impeachable offenses. Because he did. Iowa Republican Senator Joni Ernst says, I think this door of impeachable whatever has been opened. Joe Biden should be very careful what he's asking for. Because, you know, we can have a situation where if it should ever be President Biden, that immediately people, right the day after he would be elected, would be saying, well, we're going to impeach him. Which is exactly what happened when Donald Trump was elected. The day afterwards, in public, in front of TV cameras, in front of God and everybody, progressives were saying, impeachment's the answer here. Ernst apparently suggested that the grounds for impeaching Biden could be for being assigned to take on Ukrainian corruption, yet turning a blind eye to Burisma because his son was on the board making over $1 million a year. Ernst's comments, which were speculative and were an overall reflection of how Democrats' standards of impeachable conduct could be used against them, were twisted by Jennifer Epstein, the author of a report. She wrote on Twitter, Joni Ernst tells me that there would be immediately be a Republican push to impeach Biden over Ukraine if he's elected. Again, that is not what Ernst said. Conservative Seattle-based radio host Jason Rance highlighted that Epstein appears to have a pro-Biden bias, as she rolled her eyes in apparent disgust over a question that Biden was asked last year about his son, Hunter Biden, about his son's new child that he allegedly fathered with a woman in Arkansas. Epstein later deleted her tweet, a tweet about it, where she said, She deleted her tweet and she wrote, deleted another tweet on this story because I wrote could. Senator Ernst floated a hypothetical there. I stand by the story. Huh. Daily Wire editor-at-large Josh Hammer highlighted Biden's policy views in an in-depth profile piece last September. Now, this is just so you understand where creepy Uncle Joe actually stands, or sits on the side of the pool and lets people play with his leg hair. I mean, this is where he actually stands on things. And these are points you need to understand. Realizing that if the Republicans were as petty and shallow and desperate for power as the progressives are, if the conservatives were that desperate for power and petty, they could, on the day after his election, say, well, let's impeach him. After all, Ukraine. They could do that. But let's look at what Josh Hammer of the Daily Wire has to say about Joe Biden. First up, on the issues. Although Biden now presents himself as a moderate, centrist figure, the totality of his political career overall suggests that he is a firm leftist. Biden has dabbled at times in moderation, including previous support for tough-on-crime legislation and his long-standing stance that he is personally pro-life despite his support of legalized abortion. However, he has long been a progressive on legal issues, economic issues, and foreign policy issues, and even preempted President Obama's evolution when in 2012 he confirmed he was absolutely comfortable with same-sex marriage. Do you remember that President Obama announced that he was comfortable with it and said he had evolved, even though he spoke against it when he was campaigning for the 2008 election? You remember that, of course. I hope you do. Because he said that he shared the same views as Rick Warren. He said that he thought marriage was between a man and a woman back then, because that's what he needed to say in order to get elected. When he was comfortably in office for his second term, he somehow evolved. Back to Joe Biden. As chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee from 1987 to 1995, Joe Biden oversaw two of the most contentious U.S. Supreme Court nominations in recent memory. Those of Reagan nominee Robert Bork and Bush nominee Clarence Thomas. Along with Senator Ted Kennedy, the Democrat from Massachusetts, Biden helped orchestrate and lead the personally nasty, full frontal assault that ultimately resulted in the Bork nomination's failure. Biden's legislative posture has indicated an expansive view of congressional regulatory power. He helped lead the passing of the Violence Against Women Act, which was partially invalidated on constitutional grounds by the U.S. Supreme Court in the year 2000. When it comes to the economy, Biden is best described as a Keynesian who believes in the purported economic benefits of large-scale government investments and deficit spending. Along with then-President Obama, Biden shepherded through a massive fiscal stimulus package in their first year in office, oversaw the passing of the regulation-heavy Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, dramatically expanded the national debt, and hiked income taxes on the wealthy. Biden has long been supportive of a greater federal role in infrastructure bill spending. On the issue of trade, Biden voted for NAFTA in 1993. Biden has opposed the privatization of Social Security. He wants that firmly in government hands. They must control it. So that is just three aspects of Biden that you should be aware of. The issues, the Constitution, the economy. He is a leftist. He talks like a regular guy, Amtrak Joe, taking the train to work every day. One of you, one of the people. But when it really gets down to what he does, it's very different than what he says. He just comes across as the moderate. And that is why the Democrats want this man to be their next presidential candidate. They believe that the public image which he has crafted over the years will convince enough people to vote for him instead of going through another 4 years of tolerating Donald Trump. Now, remember, the reason they can say this is because they, through their web of lies, have painted this picture of our current president as being a racist, a misogynist, a white supremacist, and many other things he is not. They have painted this picture of this man that has your liberal friends believing he's a monster, and that the Democrat candidates are better options than him, especially Joe Biden, because he's more of a regular guy and he's just looking out for you. And nothing could be further from the truth. Joe Biden is just another leftist crook. Let's just say that. And let's say goodbye for Monday. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.